Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
This is something we are going to remember for the rest of our lives.
You sure you're ready for this?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 14, Windstruck. Na-na-na-na-na-na, Windstruck. Na-na-na-na-na. And now here are your hosts, Ari and Sarah DiBattic.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. How are you?
I mean, I'm fine right now. I'm scared of what we have to look forward to as this podcast continues, but we will get there. First, let's do a little site business. The day this episode drops, we will have just finished 1991 week on previously.tv. And I want to let...
Oh, right. I forgot that I wasn't speaking to you because of some mental imagery involving a certain body part.
All right, look, I should be in jail, but what I did for 1991 week is I looked back on the episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 that aired in 1991, and one of those was the season one finale called Home Again, in which Andrea offers to let Brandon have sex with her because she thinks that he's moving back to Minnesota. So I did a post on previously.tv that speculated about what would have happened if they actually had had sex. And I can't defend it. It's indefensible. I'm a terrible person and I should be on some kind of a watch list. But anyway, I will link this post.
Extremely well argued. I can't disagree with anything about it except its existence, during which I barfed myself inside out. And back right side out again.
Look, it has a
warning.
Thanks
to the word risky.
There's a warning right at the top of it that says what you're getting in. I mean, I could have been more graphic than I was. Let that be a warning to you that it's a little graphic, I guess. Anyway, I'm a fucking psycho, but check it out. It'll be in the show notes.
Yeah. You have spoiled Eat.
It's for sure the most squeef I have ever been. And while we're here, please go to glarkware.com to buy your own Don't Be Such a Squeef t-shirt or a t-shirt of The Blaze. A lot of parents read it. Or Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know. And you can advertise on this very podcast. $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. Go to previously.tv/ads. Did I get it all right, Dan?
Yeah, you did.
Hey, all right. Let's get into Windstruck. If we must, and we must.
Windstruck.
Starting with, is that even Thunderstruck? That's a different song, isn't it?
They're all the same.
They are, too. You were right. All right. Starting with our...
McEachern is losing his mind right now. Sorry, bro.
Let's begin with our D story.
Da, 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 da. Back in Black. Da, 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 da. Highway to Hell.
That's not Back in Black either.
Kelly and Dylan, some more. So Donna and Kelly are getting ready for school, and we get an update on Kelly and Dylan, which no one wanted or cared about, but which is that even after their Hell Week kiss and back of jeans groping in that very same episode, they're not a couple again. No one cares. After a dinner out with the gang, which we will fucking get to, and I'm already furious about this. This dinner is the new fucking anniversary puzzle in terms of how incredibly enraged it makes me beyond all reason. Kelly and Dylan end up alone together flirtfully, and it is so dumb in clip number 2.
I don't know what it is about the Santa Anas, but I haven't been myself all day. Maybe it's not the Santa Anas. Maybe I'm just nervous about being with you.
You know, in the Middle East, they have winds. They're called the Shirakas. They blow across the northern desert of Africa, and while these winds are blowing, if you kill somebody, they won't even try to punish you.
Citation needed.
Good tip.
Sort of like temporary insanity.
Kind of like the heat of passion. Sort of like a full moon. Our bodies are full of so much water, the gravity starts pulling on us in ways that we don't even realize.
God.
It's like a tide rising.
Rising tide raises all dopes.
This is like someone had their like Encyclopedia Britannica open to the wind entry and was just like, let's put it all in this scene. Yeah. It's so stupid.
And also, it's not like any of those things. Mm-hmm. It is those things. Yes. It just is. Like, it's not good enough to be a metaphor, and it's also not a metaphor.
Just
like, it
fuck.
Literally is those things.
Right.
Yeah. And then don't talk because you hate each other, A, and B. This is the baby talk, Kelly, that I cannot.
The fucking baby voice. Horrible. It's so insufferable.
And with the... Was this the strawberries or was that the next episode?
No, that's coming up right now because the next morning, after they have this fucking meaningful metaphorical discussion, they do fuck, presumably, because we see them in bed together having strawberries and cream. I refuse to believe that Dylan just keeps a bowl of whipped cream in his fridge. Like, sorry. They could have made it a tiny bit realistic.
He still has the same sheets he used to fuck Brenda on, but sure, he has... Oh, Jones. Solid colors. Get the knack.
Anyway, I mean, they could have just made it a tiny bit more realistic by having like just a cool whip tub, like, but they don't. It's like a metal bowl of whipped cream. Like, I'm sure he got out of bed and whipped it up. Anyway, whatever. Why do I care? He proposes that they go on a road trip to Joshua Tree, and she wants to, but there's a sorority car wash because, of course, there is. And he's pissy about it, but when she correctly observes that this leaves them exactly where they were when they broke up the last time, he denies it. But maybe things are different because then he shows up at the car wash. They start making out, and I hope the owner of the car that Kelly is supposed to be washing isn't there to see her goofing off. And then John playfully sprays her with a hose, and Kelly reacts in kind, also playfully, like she didn't think he was a rapist as recently as two episodes ago. Okay. Of course, a fucking water fight breaks out because it's TV. And the next day, Kelly bores Dylan with an article about children of divorce in Psychology Tomorrow. We love you more than Kelly loves Dylan, so we will spare you. But she's come around to the realization that they don't need to spend every second together to be a couple. Who cares? Moving on. To our C story. Nana's got a new book.
Before we do that.
Yes, please.
Did Jenny Garth's line reading seem really drunk to you? Not like Kelly was supposed to be drunk, but that she had like taken too many Benadryl and was just like, I mean,
yeah,
I'm not exactly complaining.
Yeah,
whatever, just hit us in the comments if you agree with me, but she, like, her line reading seemed very like, listen, I love you guys, not you, Dylan. So good for her. Make your own fun.
I think with it. She is supposed to be acting like overcome with lust, and that's what she defaults to. Like, she just seems love drunk, and that comes across in that way, like she's on Quaaludes or something. Because she's not good at being flirty. She doesn't like this person, as we have talked about many times. But yeah, I agree that she does seem like really weirdly drawly, and I think that's why that she's supposed to be like just so in love with him that she can't keep it together. Who knows?
She's got some Dylan in her Santa anus. Sorry.
All right, fucking Nana. So Andrea's outfit is so unacceptable. You can see it in the visual aids. She's coming from Hanukkah dinner at Grandma Rose's, and she's in like this butter yellow pantsuit. So unflattering, I assume it goes without saying. And then this white blouse with collar points that seriously go like down to her nipples, like so much further than the lapels of the jacket. It's one of her ugliest outfits, and that's really saying something. Anyway, they're coming from their first non-softball date. And she's holding a baseball glove like they couldn't have just had her hide her midsection with a fucking purse. But anyway, Jesse has no complaints, as we hear in clip number 3.
It was great meeting Grandma Rose.
got a new euphemism for sex. Look out, working shadow caster. Meeting Grandma Rose is now what it's called when someone has sex with Andrea. Sorry, Grandma Rose.
Just wish I were dead. I wish I were dead.
Andrea is pleased that he made a good impression by asking the actual Grandma Rose, the person, for seconds. And then the glove is explained in clip number 4.
I can't believe you bought me a baseball glove for Hanukkah.
Well, if you're going to hang around me, you're going to need it.
Oh, I see. So it's more than a gift.
Better believe it.
It's more than a gift. It's an obligation. Deal with it, okay? Anyway, then they kiss for so long, and the camera's on them so close. This is not the fucking Bachelor. She tells him it's getting late, and they say goodnight. And after she's seen Jesse around the corner, she looks down the hall, and there's Dan watching like a fucking creep. I made a gif of this because it's so creepy. You can see the visual aids.
But also, he is disgusted. Like, I just love the face on this actor that he's just like, gross. You guys have no chemistry. Or maybe he's just looking at the script like, how could you do this to me? I have such shiny hair. Whatever the reason, it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And when we next see Jesse and Andrea, they're at some street market. He buys Nana a white rose and recites a poem in Spanish. Her pants immediately melt off, but they can't do anything about it quite yet because then the Vasquez family catering truck pulls up and she has to go meet his family and eat a burrito. She impresses everyone by ordering it spicy, and what better way to follow a food truck burrito than clip number 5.
That was only one thing that can make this afternoon any better.
Hmm.
If you could come back to my apartment in Westwood.
You know what makes me feel really sexy is eating a burrito off a food truck.
Thank you. I have all caps notes about this. Like, do you really want to fuck the old lady after the burrito? Get the burrito to go, bone, then beans. Leg over, then legumes.
Yes.
This is basic.
Yep.
Neither of you is a virgin anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe one of you with women.
Mm. Ooh. Dave, no.
Oh, my God.
Speaking of hate crimes, Andrea comes home with a bag of food because she just can't stop eating you guys and walks straight into a Dan Rubin ambush in clip number 6.
So, how was Hanukkah with Jesus?
His name is Jesse.
Sorry,
no one cares.
Jesse.
Are you going to be watching me all the time?
Well, Andrea, I'm just worried about you. What's going to be left when the novelty wears off? What could you two possibly talk about? How to mix the perfect margarita?
For your information, he is a second-year law student.
Really?
Really.
Of course. Affirmative action.
Easy to be glib when you come from an estate in Encino, isn't it?
You really love this guy.
Yeah, you're damn right.
Then adios, muchacha.
And they... They never saw him again, I think. I think that's it for Dan.
See?
I. Adios, muchacho.
Yeah.
And also, she loves him now?
Yeah. Well, I guess she has to because
one
she
tube steak burrito and all of a sudden it's love. I mean, good for her, I guess. Also, I'm gonna barf.
Yeah. Speaking of barfing, let's move on to our B story. Brandon and Steve and Steve's latest B&E boner. So Brandon comes back to town and obviously heads straight for the Peach Pit, where Nat acts like he's returning from an 18th month deployment. He directs Brandon to Steve, who's moping in a corner booth. He is rudely taking up all by himself, by the way. And Steve asks about Emily. Brandon denies him details since he wants to know what was so urgent per Steve's message. Steve tells him about the baseball theft from the last episode, and Brandon is typically sympathetic in clip number 7.
Steve, I love you, man, but if you were any dumber, you'd require fertilizer. Why did you even have to join a fraternity anyway?
Hey, being part of this fraternity is something I'm very proud of, okay?
Why?
These guys are my brothers.
They're not.
You want to make fun of me, fine, but don't go begging on the keg house, okay?
Okay. But I gotta tell you, man, it's getting pretty tired, me having a best friend who's always getting in so much trouble.
Would it be too much to ask you for a favor, Brandel?
What do you want me to do?
Well, you're buddy-buddy with Randall. Maybe you could talk to him. Maybe he'll let me slide.
Steve, I can't do that. I'm in no position to ask Randall for any favors. Can't your brothers help you out?
We're gonna have a meeting about this tonight.
Then relax. They got you into this, they'll get you out, right?
Thanks, Randall. I knew I can count on you for this.
I hate to defend Brandon ever, especially considering where this is going to go, but he's kind of not wrong here. Like, this is a Keg problem, and it should be Keg's problem to solve, I feel like, especially since Steve was all like, they're my brothers. They're fucking assholes. Like, what are you proud of being in this fraternity? It's a bunch of dicks.
True. Then again, Steve's best friend is such a throbbing cock that I'm sure he's used to that and thinks it's normal, especially since before even asking for the favor, he endured this shitty, condescending lecture from Brandon about how it's getting really tough to be his friend.
Ugh. Yeah. Now they're both terrible.
Like, then don't show up.
Yeah.
Or just lead with, like, that was idiotic. I can't help you. This is a Keg problem. Instead of, and it just, like, throughout this episode, we're clearly supposed to side with Brandon in whatever he does and says. And his tone is consistently so unacceptable, and it starts right here, that it's like, if Steve is that much of a problem for you, why are you still friends with him? Like, I understand that it's because you're all on the same show and whatever, but could someone please direct this person not to constantly have the withering loathing ray on, especially towards adults?
We'll get to that for sure, but first, we have to do this. Dylan runs into Brandon checking his grades on his sociology midterm and gets more exposition than he gets more exposition than he bargained for in clip number 8.
A+, why am I not surprised?
Well, to tell you the truth, I was expecting a failing grade.
A workhorse like you?
Impossible. Between the professor, his wife, and the basketball player I'm supposedly tutoring, I'm learning a lot more in this course than I bargained for.
Can't be too tough. Sandra's got a B+.
Well, that's not the most amazing grade on that sheet. Deshaun Hardell got a B+ without even opening one single book.
Ooh. Are we supposed to be surprised? We're not. Also, Dylan doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, don't bore him with this. He's got his own boring problems. Her name is Kelly. Then Brenda comes in way overdressed for the stupid anniversary dinner, which we will get to, and asks what happened with Emily. And Brandon bitches about everyone asking about her as if he doesn't love the attention and is deliberately being mysterious to amp it up because he's a fucking drama queen. Brenda tries to guilt him into telling her, and he coughs up more to her than he has to anyone else, telling her about going to France and that he loves her. We fucking know, he said it 500 times. And then Brenda teases that she's going to tell everyone. No one cares. At the Keg House, Mike, Ryan, and his pant pleats, which you can see in the visual aids, they are aggressive, tell Steve that he's on his own with Ballgate because hazing is illegal. And Steve whines that everybody does it. Mike Ryan explains why this is different in clip number 9.
Yeah, only this year the progressives are running the student senate and they're gunning for us. Man, we just can't get involved.
Great, so where does that leave me, huh? And I can't even tell anybody why I was there, can I?
Fate of the house is riding on you, man. It's not fair. We should be able to do something to help Sanders. He was just doing what he was told.
John, nobody feels worse about this than me. Let's not blow this out of proportion, okay? I mean, it's a first offense. He'll probably get off with what, a slap of the wrist? But the bigger question, so we cover for your brothers.
Yeah, of course. What choice do we have?
All right. We're going to have to distance ourselves from you for a while. We're going to have to put you on probation till Monday. Can you handle that?
Yeah.
Sanders, we may have had our differences in the past, but you're one huge stud.
Oh, the trumpet of frat betrayal.
Yeah, I thought
thanks for telling you how to feel, trumpet of frat betrayal.
I thought they established that the progressives gunning for the Greeks meant nothing. Like, wasn't that the whole reason that Brandon's stomping off from the ticket meant nothing in that episode? Like, make up your mind, show Jesus.
And did they have the election, I guess?
Oh, yeah, I guess they did. And I guess they won.
I mean, And it's still the student senate.
Yeah.
No one gives a shit.
And also, Steve is not suspicious that John Sears' mortal enemy is all of a sudden sticking up for him. Come on, Steve. If you were any dumber, yeah, you'd really require fertilizer. Well, Brandon was right about that. So Brandon then finds Deshaun at school with his dry cleaned road cane dress up clothes. And Brandon wants to talk lucky Deshaun in clip number 10.
Look, I want you to know I didn't say a word to Randall about you and his wife. And I shouldn't have threatened you, but it was just at the moment I was feeling
scared to take your midterm.
You're always cutting too deep. I guess that's why I value our friendship.
Friendship? Deshaun, we don't have a friendship. All you ever tried to do was use me.
Oh, man, don't be like that. I really appreciate your help.
Yeah, but you didn't need my help, did you? Got a B plus. Randall just hand you that grade?
Yeah, and I'm cool with that. You don't live in my world. We're different, understand?
Oh, no. Don't get all racial on me now.
Fuck you!
Because this ain't a black thing or a white thing. It's a green thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's all about money.
That's right. I get a chance to showcase my talent for the pros. See, you get to shooting guard. It's a fair trade.
No, it's not. Because you didn't get to take Soch 101. You know what? You'd have liked it.
He's such a prick! Oh, my God.
Nobody likes 101 classes.
No.
Shut up, Brandon.
Also, the idea that Deshaun would admit to cheating on the test is stupid. Like, that's the reason it was a take-home. He could have been like, no, I really buckled down. Like, what does Brandon know? He wasn't even there. Who cares? But yeah, don't get all racial on me. You do not have the right to say that, Brandon, to anyone about anything ever. No, don't do it.
Yeah, really. And especially in this, in the framework of this story, which, again, this former sports editor, like, I know he sucked, but by the time you're 18 or 19 years old, you understand how this shit usually works at the Division I level in college athletics. Mm-hmm. And you would not be this bent out of shape about it. Ugh, I don't know. Moving. Like, I'm so exhausted by being asked to, like, root for this person. But the thing is, we all kind of did, I feel like. We're all like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not fair. And he's not going to learn anything. What if he gets injured? And I don't know. Like, we were all supposed to be like, yeah, Brandon makes excellent points every week. I mean, sometimes he does, but he's such a crotch about it. Like, that tone, I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's so patronizing. He's the worst. Anyway, moving on. So remember how Steve was on probation for until Monday, which, by the way, that was Friday. He shows up to the car wash the next day with his fucking fanny pack, which you can see in the visual aids. Why? All set to pitch in, but Mike has to kick him out because probation. And then Brandon does end up going to Corey Randall's office, but he just missed him. However, Lucinda is there, and Brandon is, of course, snotty, including after she tells him she talked to Deshaun and claimed there was nothing between her and Brandon. She says that she and Corey had a nasty fight, but that the ball theft was comic relief since apparently the campus cops had been tipped off, and Brandon is stunned. Lucinda offers to find out more if he's nice, and he's sarcastic and rude. And seriously, how horny is Lucinda? Aren't there any other tiny freshmen on campus who aren't bitches that she could fuck instead? Apparently not. Brandon,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, who aren't shorter than you? God, this six pump chump gotta go. Read the piece. Kara referenced earlier. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you so much. Brandon finds Steve at the Peach Pit and reports on what he just heard from Lucinda. He also says he is going to stick up with Steve, for Steve, with Professor Randall. Then Steve and his Johnny Cash look, which you can see in the visual aids, show up at the keg house to demand to know who dimed him out. But he doesn't really get any answers thanks to John Sears' immediate angry storm off. And then Corey Randall is super cold when he sees Brandon waiting on his office doorstep and has zero interest in Brandon's defense of Steve. Corey then bores Brandon about Don Drysdale history that might be of more interest to my co-host, ?
Negative.
All right. Brandon gets around to asking Randall to drop the charges against Steve. And this happens. Clip 11.
Yeah, I could do that. You could?
Oh, yeah, sure. All I'd have to do would be to call security, tell them I forgot I gave them access. It's just a mistake.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, but I'm not going to do that. Because you've been hitting the sheets with my wife. Ooh, knockdown pitch.
Did Sean tell you that?
No, no one told me. I know Lucinda when she targets somebody. I know how hard she comes on, believe me. But the question is, what am I going to do about it now?
Look, nothing happened. When I found out she was your wife, I bailed.
Oh, yeah, right. It wouldn't touch her with a 10-foot pole.
I wouldn't touch her with a sequoia. Look, I don't care whether you believe me or not. Just don't take this out on Steve.
Hey, I'll take it out on whoever I want to, pal. You're finished here.
Fine, Professor Randall. You want to play a game? I'll play a game with you. I'll go to the newspapers. I'll go to the dean. I'll go to the NCAA. I'll go to whoever will listen to me. And I'll tell them how you gave Deshaun a big fat grade just so he'd be eligible to play on the team this season.
You can't prove that.
Try me. Now, you going to call the security officer or am I?
Neither. He can't prove it. You can call the paper, you can call the whatever, the Daily Bear or whatever the CU paper is, I guess we find out next year.
Yeah. The Condor, right?
Yeah. Sorry. This is not news. It's not.
Right.
No one cares.
Also, like, Randall wouldn't do this if he didn't know he had cover from the school. So, like, the dean's not going to do anything, I feel like. I mean, whatever.
Brandon's shit's been going on since the 40s. Like, there are systems in place to make sure that when fingers are pointed, you can plausibly be like, no. Also, yeah. Don't, like, your play is not to be like, I wouldn't touch your hot wife with a sequoia. Like, no, really? Is that what all the unbuttoned button?
Yeah.
Bead necklace gnome? Just the tone, and we have a couple of visual aids in which Professor Randall's Manson lamps are, like, extremely impressive. Like, I really thought Brandon was going to burst into flames, but no, like, yeah, knockdown pitch. And then you have to follow that up by striking him out. See where this baseball metaphor is going? Because if you give him a second to regroup, he's going to bray at you. And that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. Rookie mistake. Next time, Draymond him in the nuts. Kick him into the hallway. Lock the door. You done.
Yeah. Also, not for nothing. If you know that your wife has this problem with fidelity, maybe don't take it out on the student that much. I mean, Brandon is a prick, totally. And obviously stuff was going on and would have continued to go on if she had been married to any other person alive. But, you know. Your problems in your marriage obviously predate Brandon. Sorry.
Yeah. And now you're like, if she's messing with students and you know about it, like, there are ethical issues here.
Yes.
That Brandon actually does have you on versus the grade thing, which, okay, yes, it's wrong. I don't want to act like I'm defending this practice,
oh, no.
But let's not be naive.
Yeah, no, totally. Anyway, God, moving on. If we must, to our A
story. Why are we still talking about this? I apologize.
Let's move on to our A story and wrap this shit up. Donna's virginity.
No, let's go back and talk about Brandon some more, please.
Donna's virginity. Some more. So we open this storyline, unfortunately, in a dream about sex, but not the sexy kind. Donna and her very sticky hair and tomato dress, you can see them in the visual aids, are being interviewed by, quote, Howard Stern, unquote, who the show obviously could not afford and who therefore is being played by the beach resident's landlord, Mr. Pitts, in a terrible curly wig. Howard says his listeners want to know why she's still a virgin, and then she's being woken up by David and his noisy bouquet of tulips, and I refuse to believe the dickhead we've been watching all season remembered what flower she told him was her favorite, but whatever. She's grateful and looks like a simpleton while she hugs him. You see the visual aids. It's their second anniversary as a couple. She wants to go put the flowers in water, but David somehow thinks something else might happen in clip number 12.
You know, the winds tend to affect people in strange ways.
Oh, gosh, don't I know it. My mom, she gets so irritable. My dad, he hasn't slept for like 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, well, they affect me a little bit different.
We get it.
Come on, it's a special day. Don't you feel it?
Before, was I talking in my sleep?
No, why?
Good. Well, I should go put these in some water.
At a certain point, like, wouldn't you just stop? It's like this undifferentiated. Like, I get that he's a teenager and he's horny all the time. But, like, she said she's not going to have sex until she's married. Like, back it up already. Fuck. I know that's the whole point of the storyline in this episode. It's still so annoying.
Well, it's very annoying. And here's the other problem. Like, I think that this is sort of an interesting... And once they give her a boyfriend who's also not going to bone until there's a ring on it later. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's these writers. So, of course, it doesn't go anywhere, like, nuanced or even interesting, especially given her hairstyle that season. But here's what I object to about this, besides the fact that David is acting like such a cunt all the time to her lately, that there's absolutely no way she would change her mind on the issue, given his recent behavior. Mm-hmm. It's that she is being written like this creepy eight-year-old.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is very bizarre. Like, it's both boring and disturbing. Like, the way she hugs him at the beginning and end of the episode, like, with her arms out, mm-hmm. like she's in a musical. I feel like she should have little eyeliner freckles on and be singing "I'm Just a Girl Who Can't Say No." Mm-hmm. You know, the Donna version of Oklahoma. Like, I don't... There's just something very delayed about the writing of her stuff in this storyline that is extremely fucked up and, like, never mind boring. I would kill for boring. This is really gross.
It is, because it would be one thing if they were giving her the courage of her convictions as someone who had decided on her own, like, as opposed to under Felice's orders, to remain abstinent until marriage, which is a perfectly reasonable and fine thing to do. Obviously, I assume it goes without saying that we feel this way. The issue is that then they, as you say, they make her act like she doesn't understand what he's doing, like that he's always hitting on her and she's like Lolita or something, like that she just doesn't get what he's, you know, trying to do. Which is a different thing, where it's like, well, she shouldn't have sex because she doesn't understand what sex is. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah. Anyway. Because she lives in a, you know, guided environment.
Yeah.
And when you go out for field trips, she wears a helmet. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's really not where this story should go.
No.
I'm sorry.
It's not. And there's more babying to come, so let's get to it so we can get past it. So Donna and David are making all of their friends come celebrate their dating anniversary. No! That's not, first of all, it's not a thing, really. But if it is, don't make your friends come. Don't make your friends come to your wedding anniversary either, like, unless it's a real milestone. No one fucking cares. It's between you. It has nothing to do with your friends. I'm so angry. Anyway, then Donna also tells Kelly about her dream.
I thought it was also for her birthday, though.
No, her birthday is not till the next episode. Her birthday is on
Christmas. I felt like they actually did build like a little pre-retcon into this where it's like, well, because we'll be on vacation. Like, they mentioned her birthday.
Oh, yeah. Well, in the next episode,
with you on the anniversary thing, but Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're not doing it. Like, what are we celebrating exactly?
Well, yeah. But just stuff? Ask David. Seriously. Donna then tells Kelly about her dream, as if forcing Kelly to come to this dinner is not already imposition enough on their friendship. I'm so furious that it's happening. Even more furious when Brenda and Brandon bring a fucking gift. Particularly since it's a redone American Gothic poster. And by the way, just for the record, American Gothic is not a portrait of a couple. It's a father and daughter. Everybody learn it, live it, love it. It's the truth. Kelly calls them the only married couple in the gang. Do not encourage them. And
ew,
then,
oh God, I totally forgot about that. And now it's even creepier. Sorry. Continue. Let's go.
The fucking fortune cookies come out.
Oh, Jesus.
The horrors seriously do not stop with the storyline. Let's just do this. Clip 13.
You know, I learned this great game when I was in San Francisco in this dim sum restaurant. After anybody says a fortune, everybody adds two words to it.
What words?
In bed.
Ooh, I'll go first. You can obtain any goal you choose.
In bed.
Wow.
Whoa!
Yeah, just ask Stuart Parsons.
You have the power to influence many people.
In bed!
Whoa, Dilwig!
What about you, Donna? Why don't you go next?
Okay.
Cuz?
You will be starting on a new adventure.
In bed!
Young David Silver, Maven!
Thank you, good night! Peace, peace, peace.
You can barely hear it in that clip, but David goes, I wish. Oh, God. Like,
and also, what is with Brandon in this scene? He is so game show hosty and weird.
Yeah.
He's like, what about you, Donna? Ooh.
And also, like,
down.
I mean, I guess everybody doesn't know that they're not having sex, or do they? I can't remember if they do or not. Regardless. Like, why Donna would be like, okay, like, again, to your point, it just makes it seem like she doesn't know what's happening. Anyway, God.
Like, she's, you know, touched.
Right.
Like, ew.
Well, here's more of that. On the way out, they all wish in a fountain in clip 14.
Oh, look, David, I got love.
Okay, my turn. Well, well, well. Could it be the young Silver's gonna get lucky tonight?
Mirror mouth to God's ears.
Oh, I don't know. Luck, love. Do I see a pattern developing here?
Oh, speaking of patterns, the Christmas dance is going on at West Beverly tonight, and Dave and I thought we'd stop by, kind of relive the old magic. So everyone up for it?
Donna, I didn't want to go to high school dances when I was in high school. Why would I want to go now?
Yeah, Donna, it's going to take a couple more years for me to become nostalgic for old West Bev. I don't think so. Sorry.
I'll pass.
Come on, you guys. Don't you want to be with us?
I think they want us to be by ourselves. Say goodnight, Donna.
Good night, Donna.
I mean, 8 years old was too generous. That's like five.
Mm-hmm. Like,
what's next? She comes out with little ringlets and there's a tap dance number while she's wearing a dotted Swiss and...
She's here. Like, you're not Gracie Allen. Also, I guarantee Tori Spelling did not know who that was for that to be the stuff. Anyway, speaking of dumb, David and Donna come home after dinner. She's having an allergy attack, which you'd think would make him less horny. It does not. Not even when she sneezes on him. He tries to get her not to take an antihistamine since they put her to sleep, but she prefers not sneezing over acceding to his wishes. And then the stupid dream continues, except now Felice and Dr. Martin are Howard's guests, and they are not alone. Clip 15.
And in the hot seat is hot pants David Silver, who's been pressuring Donna to do the wild thing.
I consider it romancing her, Mr. Pitts.
I'm not your landlord. I'm Howard Stern.
Oh, sorry, Howard. Nice wig.
David, what's with you and Donna and the old mattress mambo?
Well, I just want us both to share the intimacy of a real relationship.
Wow. Wow, what a rap! Dr. Martin Felice, you buy that?
Well, as a doctor, I'm familiar with the hormonal drives of young adults, but I leave all of the parenting to Felice.
And I don't buy it. Call me old-fashioned, but I don't believe in the motives of young men who wear earrings.
He takes it out.
What earring? Look at this. The guy is willing to sacrifice for a shot at your daughter.
Dr. Martin, Mrs. Martin, I love Donna. Not just for her body, but for her mind.
Whoa.
And if she has sex with me, I promise I'll marry her.
Whoa. I think we've exposed some raw honesty. I'll tell you what. Offspring for the condoms. What do you say, Felice?
Well, I guess in that case, it's all right. Donna, if you're listening, sweetheart, we give you our blessing to do the wild thing with David.
I mean, that scene is so interminable that it's still going on somewhere, but God bless Catherine Cannon.
Yep.
She really sells this shit.
She does. The other thing that I noticed as a trend through this episode is the gross euphemisms for sex. Like, we already had Randall saying, hitting the sheets with my wife. Like, I know it's network TV, but, like, doing the wild thing, so disgusting. Like, just fucking would have been so much better, but of course they can't, which is unfortunate. So many reasons. Donna and David are recording PSAs at the radio station. Did she fucking quit or not? Make up your mind, whatever. This is a long one, but unfortunately we have to hear it all. Clip.
Long one.
Clip 16.
If you're going to drink, don't drive.
And if you're going to drive, don't drink.
And if you have to choose between one or the other,
drink gasoline.
David!
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
No, it was funny. You're funny.
Was I?
And I think that you're very sexy.
Wow, what's gotten into you?
Oh, I don't know. Just feeling very grateful. I mean, no matter what I put you through, you always stay with me.
Bitterly.
You love me.
Believe me, after what happened last night and the fact that I'm still here today, proves it.
Fuck you!
I'll argue with that.
Either that or I'm totally nuts.
I said I was sorry.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean for it to come out like that. Last night was almost the perfect anniversary.
Well then, maybe we've waited long enough.
What?
I've been thinking, it's been hard not to, and lately, all of the signs seem to be pointing in one direction.
And what direction is that?
Her vagina, you fucking idiot.
I love you. And nothing we could ever do could ever be wrong.
You mean...
That's right. Tonight, I'm not going to take my antihistamine.
Wow.
Used to Gainesville.
You will spoil eat. Try not to come in your pants, David. Jesus.
David, no! David! What you also can kind of hear in that clip is that she's periodically giving him these like dry little smooches like on his nose and stuff. It's so barfy. Everything about this is so disgusting. It's like, just
because apparently she's a kindergartner. It's so weird.
Yeah. So for fuck's sake. So then we see David lighting a million fucking candles shirtless. I'm sorry to report, you can see this in the visual aids. Donna comes around the corner in what else? A virginal white satin robe, of course. And he opens his mouth so wide to kiss her. Also the visual aids. They've just gotten started when the doorbell rings. David goes to the door in his boxer briefs and nothing else because Donna has suggested that it's probably Kelly who forgot her keys. Like, but what if it's not? And of course it's not. He's basically naked. And of course it's Donna's parents. They're surprising Donna with a visit. He claims that she's not there and that he was just taking a nap. Get better at lying, dude. Dr. Martin hilariously points out that it's 10 p.m. Felice wants to know if he routinely runs around there in his underwear. And then, of course, Donna comes to the door and it all looks bad because it is. Donna claims they're letting David sleep in the couch and not in the third bedroom that, as far as her parents know, is a sewing room, I guess. Like, Felice was there. What did she think they were using that room for? God. Anyway, Felice is not having it in clip 17.
No. We walk in here unexpectedly and find the two of you in your underwear. I think there's a better explanation.
Well, actually, it turns out that we had an extra bedroom, so Kelly and I decided that David could move in.
Donna, are the two of you living together?
No, it's not like that. David has his own bedroom, and nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed. Right from the very beginning, you've been lying to me, haven't you?
Yes, but...
Every phone call, every letter has been a betrayal. And you're telling me nothing has changed? Why, I can see we never should have left her here.
Why can't you just be happy for me?
What? Why? happy for you? Why? What did you do that they should be happy for?
Yeah. Can I ask a question about who is paying for this 3-bedroom pad anyway? Because not that I think Felice's position is particularly reasonable or unhypocritical.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're paying for a 3-bedroom and David is living in it, that's information that they should have. Just from a liability standpoint, like, whatever, not to be the Felice here, but I don't. And she's right. You shouldn't have left her alone. She has the mental acuity of a 5-year-old.
Yeah. I mean, I assume that all of the parents were chipping in. And so, like, if Donna and Kelly were each only paying a third, I mean, Jackie doesn't care. She obviously knows that David is there. But if they were paying a third of the rent for Donna, it would be similar to what a 2-bedroom would be. This doesn't change the fact that, like, Felice helped her move in. Like, is the portal to David's room, like, through the back of a closet to Narnia? Like, she would have known there was a third room. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, the next day, the Martins show up at the apartment to take Donna to church, of course. She's on the phone apologizing. She had been talking to David, but when she comes out, she apologizes to her parents for the night before. Felice says she doesn't know why Donna had to lie to her. Donna says that Felice wouldn't have let them take the apartment if she'd known. And when Felice tries to deny it, Dr. Martin is like, come on. Because
Dr. Martin is hilarious in this whole episode. I got this one screen grab of him staring with utter skepticism at David's package while they're all at the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some great reactions all around. Anyway. Dr. Martin says that Donna has her own life and has to make her own decisions wrong. He fully says she knows it's true, but it's hard for her. And once again, they dance around the phrasing of what is happening in clip 18.
Well, you need to have a little faith in the job you've done. And no, I've done nothing to make you ashamed of me.
Ashamed is a little much. I mean, not if Felice Martin was your mother, but Jesus Christ, like, if Donna had sex, would she be actually ashamed? Like, embarrassed that she did it with someone with an earring, maybe. But other than that, like, my God.
Yeah, unless she did it on TV, I'm not really seeing how the shame factors in. And I'm sorry I keep coming back to this, but when you want your parents to respect you as an adult, try pitching your voice somewhere past the first fucking grade because you're speaking to them about your sex life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, making your voice extra babyish is not what it takes to convince them that your hymen is still intact if they have doubts, I hope. Anyway. Donna promises Felice that she can still trust Donna. And then Donna comes back from brunch to find David on the deck. She tells him that her parents signed off on his continuing to live there. And then we get our final clip.
I don't know how you did it, but I say we just pick up where we left off.
No, David, I don't think so.
Now what?
Dick.
It's just that I gave them my word that I wouldn't.
See, I knew it. Second you saw your mother, it would be high school all over again.
But David, they trust me. It's not like that's all we have between us. You said so yourself.
Oh, I totally lied. Okay.
You really think so?
I'm sure of it.
Read a room.
David, you're the best.
No.
Look, Piccolo.
I think that was actually a high, high, high piano key, but either way, yeah. Like,
ew. And she's just like, making this creepy daddy face with her arms at 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, ugh. And I'd like to give him shit for the now what, because I mean, well, now what is that? If you're gonna take that fucking tone, you're getting nothing,
right?
But she's 5. There's no reasoning with a 5-year-old.
Yeah. So you can see the visual aids that close on Donna's gleeful, creepy hugging, as Sarah has described, and then a shot of David looking like, I'm not so sure about this, so that we know there's trouble in not paradise. These two fucking idiots.
Boradise.
Exactly. Anyway, let's wrap it up with the episode MVP. Hard to pick between the two Martins, but I'm going to say Felice, because she knows that David is bullshit, and I love her for it.
Yeah, I'm going to go Dr. Martin. Just that one look at, because there's a weird flap on the boxer briefs, and it's weird, and I just feel like Dr. Martin spoke for me with his wicked side eye. Well done, sir.
Also, it should be mentioned, the boxer briefs are white, which, like, makes them so much worse. I don't know, like, a stripe, maybe, a color, something. Not whatever.
Anything.
Anyway, least valuable player. Let's not make this racial, Brandon, you fucking asshole.
Just for the glee, yeah, I was going to say Donna, but it's really not fair to pick on a minor child. So I'm going to go with Brandon, because even if, like, leaving aside all that foolishness with Deshaun and, like, him practically spitting literally in his professor's face, the amphetamine adjacent glee with which he, like, brought the gift of the in bed thing, which, P.S. Yeah. I, the most sheltered 13-year-old in New Jersey, had heard of it by age 13.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Shut up, Brandon.
Well, speaking of which, let's do the Moo Moo Parker Challenge. 5 ways from this episode, Brandon could have ended up dead. Choking on a fortune cookie because he was too self-congratulatory about his stupid not a game at the fucking unnecessary anniversary dinner for David and Donna. That's one.
Lazy Susan, like, was Lazy Susan too enthusiastically, slipped its moorings, whipped through the air and beheaded him.
Deshaun gets sick of his bullshit and jams the hook of his dry cleaning hanger in Brandon's throat, killing him.
Drowns in the wishing fountain at the restaurant.
That one is a legit concern. Punched through the head by Corey Randall, killing him instantly.
Ain't a cord in the land, Professor.
And that makes 5.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. We are now up to chapter 12, The Politics of Shannon. This is very exciting, you guys.
Oh.
All right. We open with a...
And timely.
Indeed. So we open with a quote, which I won't repeat. It's dumb. That Shannon is a Republican is the least of her worries. What people have had a problem with is her contradictory nature. Her membership in the grand old party seems to be one handed down by her parents and something she carries in name only. She has precariously managed a public balancing act upon the tightly drawn Republican party line. Yet she also executed backflips with the perfection of a gymnast in some remarkable left turns toward liberalism. She's one of the rare Hollywood stars in the tiny club of celebrity conservatism with members like Sonny Bono, RIP, and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yet she has starred in a video in which she was paid to advocate consumption of the pill. Consumption seems like the wrong word. It's not Pac-Man.
Taken by the handful, a low-cal snack.
Shannon has also professed to be pro-choice. She unflinchingly dealt
I'm aborting babies around me. I'm having so many pills. It's a gravity well of babylessness.
Shannon has also...
Dave, boobs.
Shannon has also professed to be pro-choice. She unflinchingly dealt with the subjects of condoms and AIDS as Brenda Walsh on 90210. Her loyalties as a young starlet of conservative activism, however, have been largely overlooked by those in Washington, D.C. Justly. In exchange for her poignant recital of the Pledge of Allegiance at the Republican National Convention, barf, Shannon was reportedly promised by the organizers that she would meet President Bush, the first. As the night progressed, she was worried that no one had taken her to meet the president. Agitated beyond belief, beyond restraint, sorry, she flounced past the Secret Service men, walked up to Barbara Bush, senior, presumably, and said, "Hi, I'm Shannon Doherty." Barbara, registering no sign of recognition, appeared stunned by the presence of our nubile pledge pusher. She clutched her pearls and responded, "That's very nice." As Barbara's hair began to turn another shade whiter, the Secret Service men plucked the feisty actress from Mrs. Bush's side and firmly guided her to the fringes of the crowd, tactfully explaining that the First Lady of 20005 probably did not watch the First Lady of 90210. I'm going to leave this on a cliffhanger because there's more to this story, but we'll hear it next time.
Oh, man. Oh, me? Okay.
Yep.
Olay. Next time on Again With This, congrats, Dave and Dara. Contrivance prevents the Walshes from blighting Hawaii for Christmas, but nothing can come between Dylan Scamily and Dead Jack's money, or Donna and virginity stuff. The visual aids will unite you and Pepto-Bismol, and you can find those at our website at previously.tv. You can also follow us on Twitter at previouslyTV. My marvelous co-host Tara Ariano is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation, and our outstanding producer David T. Cole is on Instagram at Glark. And we'll talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeperoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.